extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Wow. From New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental Tire from the AT&T 5G Virtual Studios. I'm Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, Kalen Carr, David Goss, no Matt Doyle, but that's okay. We'll survive without him. What a day this is, boys. It's the first Monday back. I'm feeling good. Soccer started this weekend in Kansas City for the youngins. Didn't quite make it on the field this time. It was a watching game, says Cameron, but we're going to be out there next time. How you doing? How you feeling?
Pretty good. Were there any Sporting Kansas City scouts there?
No. We wouldn't have had any tape to show them, but we're going to rectify that.
But you know what?
Okay. First, soccer games are tough. It's tough.
But we talk youth development all the time, and watching and understanding.
Exactly.
Seeing the whole game is as important as getting in there. A lot of times. That's why we talk about, if this player goes over in January, it's hard for them to adjust because they don't have time to fit in before the game start.
Right.
Cameron's
adjustment
just
period.
Next level.
Exactly. Yeah. No, this is good club management, actually. When you bring in a new signing, you want to acclimate them. Don't put them in a position where they don't feel they can succeed.
Especially his birthday. He's November, right? So he's on the younger side of the, 2019?
Yeah, 27. Among the 2017s, he's definitely on the younger side
of the spectrum. You got to protect your 17s. Everyone
knows
that.
We're just here to support, and he is going to be right there. He was kicking me around the park the other day when it was just dad and son. So you watch out. You watch out. OP Foxes, Cameron is coming for you this Saturday.
Wow, big
Row Park. What's up? We're going to hit the monkey bars right before.
We get a live Twitter Spaces pre and post?
Depending on how it goes. We got to respect his privacy and my privacy as well. Big show coming up today. It's a Monday. I believe week 26 just came and went. It's hard for me to remember sometimes. We're going to track the Revs today, as we will every single show, until they can't make history or they win the Supporters' Shield. Luchi Gonzalez, the big news, the sort of quietly breaking news this weekend after that loss to Houston, the FC Dallas manager of two and a half years, let go by the club. That is big news. It's the third coach this year, by the way. Bubble watch is on. There's a lot of teams on the bubble, like the entire Eastern Conference. Outside the Revs, it's just a bubble. So we'll go into the biggest results there, who won, who lost, who didn't get it done, who might be a fool's gold. Looking at you, Inter Miami. Contenders in trouble, hit some of those. Hit our Coach of the Year candidates outside the obvious. This is for you, Nashville fans. You still might not be happy with me after we do it. And make sure to go check out MLSsoccer.com. Matt Doyle is not here today, but he did write his column for Week 26. That is always a must-read. So go get his thoughts on the weekend action. And then Charlie Boehm had a thoughtful one on Luchi Gonzalez's dismissal. We also want to shout out to our Extra Time Fantasy League winner, Soron North, you crazy loons, literally reading exactly what Anders wrote here, so I don't know where I'm going. Put up 128 points. Okay, that was their team name. Had a contrary captain pick in Julian Gressel. You got to respect targeting revenge games on that one, even if DC United did not, in fact, win. Before we hit the weekend, big news we cannot let go here. Justin Morrow announced his retirement. Maybe the best left back in MLS history. I completely agree with all of those saying that the best is maybe yet to come for Justin in terms of impacting the game and impacting our society. We shall see. I see you wearing the Black Lives Matter shirt there, Kalen, and that was a big part of the Black Players Coalition, which I think that Justin will still be a huge part of, obviously, going forward. I do wonder about this on the field, though, and we'll start with you, Dave. Is he the best left back in MLS history? I was racking my brain, and I was like, he has a very, very good case. He might be the best left back in MLS history.
So those questions are always tough because you're talking career and then peak output, right, when you talk about best. So, like, you could say Kamar Lawrence had a season that's probably the best season we've ever seen from a left back. You could say DeMarcus Beasley at a time was the best left back in MLS, but you wouldn't
say... You might ask whether he was even a left back, too, the way you consider him, and the same thing for Jeff Agus. That makes this...
Well, and with Beasley, if you're putting him on a best 11 list, you're going to put him at midfield, right? So, like, he's not going to be on that list twice. I have always said that Justin Morrow's in that conversation. The key with that position in this league is it's a position where teams often don't have consistency and haven't spent a lot of money. And so it's not a coincidence that every team Justin Morrow played for won trophies. like his impact on his teams at that position in San Jose and then in Toronto, I don't believe is a coincidence. And you could say for Beta Shore as well, obviously his partner at two of those places on the other side of the field for a large stretch. So I think he's in that top five conversation 100%. And I think there's a few different ways that you can angle that he is number one, and I wouldn't disagree with all of them. My memory shout out is Jose Berciaga Jr.
Ooh,
legend,
yes.
Tearing down the left side, ripping it up for KC. So that's the one I wanted to throw in there.
Yeah, that's a good Wizards reference, and I believe Berciaga definitely a best 11 player as well. Kalen, what would you say? Best in MLS history? He's definitely in the argument. I completely agree with Dave. Like, if you have a top five, really probably a top three, given the collective and the individual accomplishments. And then if you wrap in sort of the personal side as well, he rises straight up the charts. But is he number one for you?
I think he's right up there. If he's not one, he's maybe 1A. I played with a really good left back with Gonzalo Segarra, who I thought was super consistent, played with the Costa Rican national team. Did really well. I think, you know, you could probably also mention Rodney Wallace at some measure with just, you know, more of an attacking fullback. But I think when you look at Moro as well, just his combination of skill set where he could get forward in the attack, he could get goals, he great service, athletic, defend with anybody, but really kind of weaponized, especially this Toronto FC team in a way that we had yet to see a team really kind of like bomb forward like that. But the other name that is the kind of one or 1A, you know, you can kind of pick your poison, and this one is Todd Donovan. You know, Todd's a, yeah. Todd for me, I think five championships. He won one his rookie year with San Jose on a very veteran team that was not playing young players. Todd played a big role throughout that season, I think, on their way to the championship. And then he went and took, I think, four more with LA Galaxy. I think his game changed as time went on, where it became a little bit more, less about bombing forward, which he was, I think people probably who watched later in his career forget how good Todd Donovan was going forward with the ball. Incredible pace, great left foot, could score goals, do a lot of the things that we see a modern left back do. And later in his career, it was a little bit less of that, but just so steady, always a winner. I think two MLS Cups, or MLS Cups with two different clubs, although not to devalue the supporter shield that Moro won with San Jose. And then, of course, you also, I don't know how you take anything against a guy who, you know, played for the Galaxy with all those stars. And you could say the same with Justin with TFC. But for me, it's those two, yeah, as one A, whichever way you want to slice it. I think those two are sort of head and shoulders, I think, probably above the rest right now.
Yeah, I think total body of work, you would say that about as well. Again, individual and collective, those two. Wade Barrett would be a shout too, though a quiet, yep, shout, sort of a respectful one. Probably not going to get into that conversation of the best, but is going to have to be in at least your top 10, if not better. A lot of championships for him, a lot of leadership, still making an impact as well. Let us know what you think, man. Justin Moro, what a career he's had. Is he the best left back in MLS? Good luck, Justin. I know it's not over for you. You got a full season to finish here, and some respect to get for Toronto FC before you get out of here, but a lot to come from Justin Moro in the years ahead in this league. A lot to come from the Revs, we expect as well. Here's your update on the Revs' bid to make MLS history. 1-1 draw, home draw, against the Crew this weekend. I think it was like 33-6 in shots, 3-1 in expected goals. Bruce Arena predictably said we should have won this game 3-0. Of course, they didn't win the game 3-0. It was 1-1. They did not finish. But they're still on pace. Worry not, Revs fan. If you want to make history, you're still on pace here. You have 56 points. The record for LAFC, of course, was 72. You have 8 games left, so the max points the Revs can pick up if they swept this thing would be 80. So they could make history there. The first team to hit 80, to even come close to 80. They need 17-24 to make the pass and get to 73. So that's what? That's 6 wins and a draw, probably the easiest way to get to that math. But they're on pace. They're on pace for 73 right now. So a point more. 0.04 points per game better than LAFC's pace. And their next 5 are at Chicago, home against Orlando, at Montreal, at Toronto, and then NYCFC at home. So you're talking about 3 Eastern Conference playoff teams and then a couple, patsies in there. How do we feel about the Revs? I know there was a conversation when I was gone about whether or not it was just a shoe-in that they're going to win the Supporters Shield. Are they going to make history? Do you feel confident in that or no?
I said no when we had the conversation, and I still say no.
You said you don't feel confident?
I don't think they're going to make history.
Oh, okay.
There's one thing that they're here for, and that's to win MLS Cup. And I think down the stretch, especially as Carlos Hill comes back from injury, they're going to be careful with guys. That doesn't mean they can't get results, as we saw against NYCFC, I think it was last week, right?
Yeah.
They started a front line of Ima, Kiza, and Bunbury, and they still got the result. But I'd be surprised if Bruce goes for it, and I think it's going to be a little tough.
Yeah, who cares? I really could care less whether they get the points record for a season or not. I mean, the history that they need to make.
Shield. I was like, oh.
Oh, no, the Shield, the Shield. No. Yeah, no, they're going to get the Shield.
Came back around.
I think the points record is like whatever to me. I mean, it's like if you win Supporter Shield and you win MLS Cup, which is the goal there, that's all the history you need. Nobody's going to say, well, they didn't quite get the, you know, points record or whatever it is. But if anything, I came away a little bit more confident after this last match that they're going to get the Shield, because they almost couldn't have had more opportunities to get a win and have an off day, to the point where they were literally shooting on Eloy Room at the end of the game, where the man could barely even walk, and like somehow heroically was, you know, I think they were out of substitutions, or they actually weren't out of subs, but they were out of substitution
moments.
Windows. There you go. Thank you.
Yeah.
But they were just peppering him, and he just happened to sort of land at him. So I agree with Bruce that I think the result was definitely favorable to Columbus in this one, and it just goes to show like the talent that's available for this team, and how even on their off days they're ending up with 1 point, and even on an off day probably should end up with 3.
Bruce has 72 written on a whiteboard somewhere in big, bold letters that he's like outlined 4 times? He's like, this is we're going to get past 72.
He probably does. And it's probably his favorite sandwich order at his favorite restaurant. And he left it up there from a year and a half ago.
It's the Bruce Arena.
Yeah, exactly.
What would the Bruce Arena be? He might have his own sandwich.
I think
I'd be shocked.
Didn't he work at a deli or was it a pizza place on Long Island? You never know. Either way, they're good.
Yeah. Somewhere in Brooklyn, some like bodega has a Bruce Arena.
East Meadow. We're talking New Hyde Park,
sorry,
I think.
My bad. But if we ever, you know what, we should go together on a New York bodega, and then we should just have sandwiches named after MLS players. And
I'm fine with that.
Nobody would care. But
So if the Revs set the points record, it would be the third time in 5 seasons that the team that won Supporter Shield.
So Toronto,
it was TFC in 2017.
Toronto said it.
LAFC in 2018.
Well, didn't the Red Bulls, or did they come up just short?
Oh, maybe the Red Bulls tied it. Or set it. Okay, so then the Red Bulls, then LAFC, then no one.
I think it was Red Bulls set it, Toronto FC broke it, LAFC broke it. Now we're wondering if Revs will break it, right?
I don't know.
I don't know, man.
Anders, save us. Where are you?
Come on, man. We need that check on the back.
What's your guys' opinion on why that's happening? Why are we seeing
teams breaking these records? That's the point to what Kalen's saying is, like, I don't know what it means right now. You were correct, Weeby. So it was Red Bulls, TFC, then LAFC. So it got broken three straight years.
So if you break those down, Red Bulls was system, right? Like, it wasn't a spin big, we have just so much more talent than everybody else. It was our system, and then we had Tyler Adams, basically. That was certainly quite helpful. And then you have Toronto FC, that was probably spending, right? That's probably what you would put it down to, and continuity with Greg Vanney. And LAFC, you would say it's spending, but then it's also Carlos Vela lighting the world on fire in a way that MLS just had not seen production of that level. And then the Revs are, I think, sort of an indication of the times, which is they have the big-time DP attackers. They've spent big. They have big transfer fees for, you know, Bo and Buxa. They got Hugh at the right time.
I knew you were wrong. Anders corrected it, yeah. Because Red Bulls was 2018, and TFC... Because TFC did the double, and they won Cup in 2017. That's what made no sense in that whole thing. Whatever it is, and Weeby just gave us a beautiful breakdown of all of it, I would just say, clearly right now, something is happening where it's possible. And to Kalen's point of, like, caring and not caring, like, it matters. You always want to set a record, and you never know how long it'll stand. But I think the league is in a weird moment of flux where you've got clubs that are moving in weird different directions and different styles. And it has maybe allowed a situation where there are more teams at the bottom that you can get points off of. I don't know that this is true.
Is it just that there are more tools, like, in the box to build a team? And so if you're good at using all the tools and other teams are, you know, let's say they're 2 for 5 whatever, and the like sort of resources they have available, and you're 5-for-5, all of a sudden your margin just gets that much more. Like, your depth is better, so you win midweek games that that other teams in the past wouldn't have been able to run out. They're not going 18 deep with the level of quality that we are now.
But shouldn't, like, the team you were playing in midweek also have thinner teams in 2008? You know what I mean? Like, shouldn't it all be relative?
And I don't know. The part what's where thinner? What's thinner? Bad teams in 2008 or FC Cincinnati?
That's my point, though. So, I don't know. There's something interesting going on right now, something we should probably dig into after the season.
Yeah, Rev's still on pace, but I agree with you, Kalen. Doesn't matter. They want the Shield. They want MLS Cup. That's the goal. Bruce Arena basically has said, going to these last eight games, I'm going to play the players that are fresh, and in Bruce Arena translation there, it's like the Ed Kizza show rolls on. So,
The other point that they might end up with the points record is I don't think he's going to need to rest players, especially going towards the end of the season. Carlos Hill might be the only one that you really need to kind of protect, but we've seen at this point how they've been able to cope without him for large stretches. Going into the playoffs,
would you not protect an Andrew Farrell?
From my perspective, looking at towards the very end, and we were looking at decision day on the last day already, and I think they play Inter Miami on the last day. From what I know of Bruce's teams, I don't think he wants to go. Playoffs are especially with the one-off format. I don't think you want to rest guys going towards the end of the season. And what I know about Bruce Arena is that he's going to be trying to gear this team up at the end of the year, if anything. So I really don't know if that's going to, I think that could bode in their favor as far as going after the points record, even if it's less about going for the record than going after form, chasing good form going into the playoffs.
You just drew a game at home, Revs fans, and we talked about you for like 5 minutes. So don't ever complain to me again about how much content you get on Extra Time. Don't ever bring it in my Twitter mentions. All right, the big news, and we'll get to the rest of the weekend. There is so much to talk about because the playoff line continues to be sort of the point of emphasis. And basically every team outside the Revs and maybe like Sounders and Sporting Kansas City are just jockeying around it. Lucha Gonzalez, FC Dallas part ways. Houston won 3-2 this weekend to take El Capitan. And FC Dallas announced the departure of Lucha Gonzalez afterwards as head coach of the club. Director of soccer ops, Marco Ferruzzi, who's been there a long time, is going to manage the club on an interim basis, and they're going to search for a new head coach immediately. It's the third coaching change of the season. As I mentioned, Chris Armas, Toronto FC, lost his job. Gabriel Heinze, of course, in Atlanta, lost his job. Some history here before I get your take on this, Dave, because I know that you've been very close to the FC Dallas sort of ecosystem for a while now. He was appointed ahead of 2019. His record, 28 wins, 29 losses, 25 draws, so, I mean, damn near 500. First year, 2019, they were 7th in the West, 13th overall in the Shield. They lost to the Sounders in round one of the playoffs. You remember that game. It was crazy. It was back and forth at the end. They were all, like, hands on knees. Some guys were crying. They put so much emotion to that game, and it just sort of felt like, wow, Lucci has the pulse. This young FC Dallas team is just going to rise and rise and rise. Last year, 2020, an insane year. We know that. 6th in the West, 11th overall. Won a playoff game. PKs against the Timbers, lost again 1-0 to the Sounders. And then this year, they've basically been at the bottom of the Western Conference for most of the season. They lose their rivals. And Lucci, who did so much for the club, whether it be on the academy side and then as head coach, is out. A lot to talk about here. Transfer policy is part of it. Selling players and who replaced them. Expectations in relation to that transfer policy, Dave. Like, how do you win when you are also moving out your best players and also at inopportune times? We've always enjoyed talking to Lucci on this show. I've always enjoyed Lucci as just a dude outside of this show, just seeing him at events, talking to him about the game, getting his insight on sort of everything back to front, youth development all the way to the first team. What was your reaction when you saw this news? Were you surprised? What do you make of it when you look at FC Dallas, the club, and where they are now?
I don't think you could say you're totally surprised, because this year's been a letdown for the club, and you just went through it. Playoffs the last 2 years, Lucci's first year, they make the playoffs, they lose in heartbreaking fashion, and it's kind of this like, oh, it's an emotional victory, though. Next year will be better. The next year was better. They make the playoffs again. They win an away playoff game in Portland, obviously in COVID, and then they go to Seattle and lose again 1-0 to a team that, you know, goes on and is one of the best teams in the league. So I think that was the trend you were looking for. obviously, the next step to that is going to a Western Conference Finals, going to an MLS Cup. That's not going to be the case this year. And so then you try and figure out what's going to happen in this club and what the point is. Obviously, you always want to win every single game you play. But can the expectation really be that they're going to take one step up? And I understand this year they've taken a step down. And that I'm sure is their point of concern is, well, it's going in the wrong direction. But if you have a flow of players in and out, there are going to be stumbles because it is harder to replace a player, even at the same level, than maintain a player. It's just hard to bring people in and be good consistently and fill in for players who are successful, especially if you're bringing players in from outside the league or you're using very young players who, even if they're successful, it will take time sometimes for these players to reach their level. Look at Ricardo Pepi. Yeah, he's great, but 2 years ago, he wasn't a starter and you could not pencil him in as a starter for that team. The biggest thing I see with this group is they sold Thiago Santos on April 1st and they kicked off their season 2 weeks later. The linchpin of their central midfield, they sold 2 weeks before the season starts. And the expectation was for them to get better than last year, make the playoffs, and win a playoff game. Those things don't exactly line up. And so while you can say Lucci didn't get enough out of Frank O'Hara, who they spent DP money on, although it wasn't his decision, and maybe hasn't gotten enough out of a lot of these veteran signings, he clearly has gotten the most he can out of the academy players, and he's been successful. So I don't know what you're asking for from this team. So I think it's a little unfortunate. I have no idea what direction the club goes in now from specifically a coaching point of view, right? Like if their big thing is using their academy and selling those players, there is no person better linked to that than Lucci Gonzalez. And so it'll be interesting now if they go from outside the league or maybe an assistant from another team that they think can be more successful in Major League Soccer, you know, in terms of playoffs and whatever. But I don't think any of us look at this Dallas team and say this is a team that has to contend at the top of the West or should be contending at the top of the West from a pure roster point of view. And over the 3 years Lucci's been there, he's been more successful than a number of coaches on other clubs who still have jobs.
It's a really tough needle to thread, right? Like this idea that your goal is to win MLS Cup in conjunction with we're going to sell and we're going to sell sometimes in inconvenient moments.
Yeah, Weeby, I went back and again,
to what you're saying, I don't know anybody better suited to thread that needle really than Lucci was now, past tense.
Yeah.
In the sense of understanding the market, the city, the kids in the academy, the pathway, how to use that pathway to best, you know, level up young talent, because you said it with Pepi. Like, it's not just a, like, oh, he just got dropped in this year, look at him, he's a boss. It's a, from the time the kid was 13, 14 years old, you made all these decisions, and you created all these relationships to help make those decisions pay off, and lo and behold, they are paying off, they're going to reap the dividends. But, like, if it's somebody who's not familiar with the area or the players or understanding the pathway or the ethos of the club, are you going to have him come through in that way? Are you going to have Reggie Cannon come through and succeed in the way he has? Are you going to have Brian Reynolds succeed immediately when walking in and make you a bunch of money on the back end? Is Tanner Tessman, despite maybe not even getting that many minutes, we always wanted more from Tanner Tessman in the league, get sold to Venezia? Like, the players sold in these 3 years that he was there is crazy. Carlos Guerrero, we're talking about one of the better central midfielders in the entire league. Chris Richards, I know that was a weird one because of Bayern, and he probably was never going to be with FC Dallas, but... You know, in a different world, maybe
Chris Richards is the player that Lucci Gonzalez brought into FC Dallas as a club and developed along so that they could sell it.
And other guys they let go here within all this time. You talk about the incomings, like, maybe I'm just a minor Figueroa homer from forever, but like, I still think he could be a decent piece. Maxirudu Tesho, Dom Baji left. Like, I don't know. Maybe that's not what they need on these teams, but the guys they brought in aren't what they need. They let Fafa and Michael Barrios go, and both those guys are better than their wingers by far this year, easily. You know, Thiago Santos gone. I don't know. I don't know who can thread that needle or whether that needle can be thread, really. Who has shown that they can do it so far?
And so I guess my point was is, okay, so you bring in O'Brien, you bring in Vargas, you bring in Schoen. You think these guys can help you win an MLS Cup. As you rotate teams through, it will take time. It's not always going to be last year we were good, next year we're better. For example, and then a smaller one, look at the Philly Union. They lost Brendan Aaronson and Mark McKenzie. I think they're having a fine season. They're seventh in the Eastern Conference. Like, you're not always going to hit and then jump on. Look at the Red Bulls. We just talked about them setting a points record. Then they sell Tyler Adams. They've had some good seasons since. They've not. It's going to be up and down if that's the type of team you are. You would like to hit on the ups and win a Shield like Philly did or go to an MLS Cup. But it's not guaranteed that every year it's going to be linear if you are moving through players at this rate. And so I think the expectations are a little frustrating. Now, we talk about this all the time. You can't fire every player on a team. So if you want to create difference quickly, really, from an ownership point of view down, your only option is the coach. It seems short-sighted to me, though, that things are going to get better favorably for this club going forward by letting him go. But you never know if there's a bigger plan around it.
Yeah, I think some of it does come down to your expectations and where the, what your goals are as a club. And I went back to this article, I think from the beginning of the season, from Tom Bogart, who said, you know, it was an interview and he says, look, this is Lucci. And he says, look, I've yet to see an MLS Cup winner be a selling club that sells players from their academy. There's been selling clubs, but maybe not exactly from the academy. Being willing to lose your top right back or your top center mid because it's a great opportunity for the player, the league, and the club. And it's a model to keep growing and developing, reinvesting what we want to do. So the confidence to develop and transfer these players. Why can't we be the first to do that? Why can't we make that a model of success for the future? And I think, you know, for me, Dallas falls into a strange category where they are at once the envy of a lot of clubs because they have really sort of changed, and become sort of like made global headlines as far as the quality of players and the reliability of this sort of big shift in MLS as far as building young players up and then selling them abroad. And then they're also below the playoff line. And so yeah. I think it's showing that at the same time, like you can be both right now in MLS where, and in fact, like it's very lofty expectations. FC Dallas was never going to win MLS Cup this year. That was just not going to be their expectation. They were a fringe playoff team the last 2 years, and they took a step forward each year. But if you sell players on, we're not at the point yet where you can sell players on and not adjust your expectations and expect to continue to rise. We saw that with Philadelphia, to your point, Goss, where we said, supporter shield winners. You sell on Mark McKenzie and Brendan Aaronson, they're seventh in the East, right? The expectation right now for Philadelphia is not necessarily to win the supporter shield as much as they would like that, right? Even when you sell players on from a transfer perspective and you sell Miguel Almiron or you sell Diego Rossi, you start to see the gaps in performance from there because you can say the model is, okay, you say Dortmund or Ajax or whatever, they sell on Sancho and they buy three or four of those players. And Atlanta United has come the closest to trying that where they sell on a Miguel Almiron and they hire Barco, right? But like, that's not guaranteed either. And in Dortmund, they would sign three Barcos. They would be, right. There would be, it's just not, it's not a sustainable thing yet to say, we want to shift to this new model and we want to have this whole new identity and sell players and then not redefine success in other ways too. And so for me, I think Lucci fell into a little bit of this trap where, you know, he was expected to be above, you know, continuing to make progress on the field, but then the definition for success was different internally. And the thing that does worry me a little bit is, does this have a chilling effect on managers playing young players in MLS? And I think when you look in the past and you look at the teams and clubs that have been successful at it, Philadelphia Union didn't always have the greatest success. Jim Curtin would tell you so as much himself, where they had to learn in the playoffs, they had to learn. Now, the difference is their floor was maybe not as low as Dallas, where they're 11th right now in the West. But they also did a much better job of their signings from abroad, where they have, if you add a Bedoya, you add a Montero, you add, you know, Blake, you add these different pieces to the puzzle to this Dallas team, that might help, right? So I think you guys hit the nail on the head that they got a lot of those signings wrong and did a lot right with bringing those young players along. So to me, it just looks like a little bit, I worry a little bit about the chilling effect, because if you're the next man, and maybe that's what FC Dallas wants to do, is they want to shift. I think it would be a mistake. But if you're a new manager coming into FC Dallas and you take this job, and you're hovering right around the playoff line and you have to make a tough decision on whether to play a young player from the academy and give him an opportunity, or you want to play a veteran to save your job. That's what's happened in the history of MLS in the past. That's the MLS that I played in, where it was like, I got to fight for my job now. And yes, there is pressure on managers, always going to be. I'm not saying that there shouldn't be pressure on the manager, and that results don't matter, but you can't have it both ways. And for me, FC Dallas is falling a little bit into that category of saying, we want to sell these players, we want to change the model and do all this, but we also want this other thing where we need to be winning all the time, regardless of who we've moved on from.
And not to go too far down the rabbit hole here, but for FC Dallas, they have this proven model now, and we're not generations enough into this for it all to work, where it's like, yeah, we've got five good academy kids coming in. One's 21, one's 19, though. So, you know, we're ready to have a starting lineup and sell one guy out. But for FC Dallas, one, Austin FC has now moved into your state. Houston has a new owner, and they've reinvested in the academy over the last 2 years. And currently, Todd Ramos, who's the former U.S. Youth National Team coach, is their head coach. And we've heard rumblings, we don't know or not, about potentially homegrown territories going away. For Dallas, it isn't a guarantee that they're going to be the academy team, right? Like, this is something they continually have to work at. And Kaylin, you know this better than anyone. Trust is the biggest part of families and players wanting to join clubs. And that has been what Luchi Gonzalez has built at FC Dallas. And Oscar Pereja has a huge part of that as well. But Oscar Pereja started to play young players, a lot of young players that maybe wouldn't have stayed with Dallas because they didn't feel like they were going to get the first team minutes or they were going to get the right spot and the right opportunity. I think stayed because of the relationship Luchi Gonzalez built with them. And it's something he was going to continue to do with families. So this could be a dangerous moment for FC Dallas as well, choosing to move on as they're under more pressure, even though they've been successful from an academy level than they've ever been before.
Now, one thing I will say here, we all respect Luchi a ton. We know the work he's done on a couple different levels in Dallas. There were question marks about some of the managerial side with the first team. Tactically, you know, the integration of some of those new signings, substitution patterns at times, how aggressive he was. So there were questions. It's not like we're sitting here saying, hey, Luchi Gonzalez was an absolute saint with Dallas. Everything he did was perfect. Zero chance that he should be let go. But there is a big conversation to be had, and we are literally just scratching the surface of it, I think, about expectations versus actions when it comes to actually building your team. I mean, you just look at the players that are gone and the players that came in, the talent level was not the same. And when it was improved, it was because those players were developed over many years in the academy, came up, and when they got their opportunity, seized it. Then you'll get, I mean, like, Paxton Pomykal hasn't been healthy for basically his entire tenure, right? Like, just a little bit at the beginning, and then later on he came back for the playoffs and was a big part of that insane game against the Sounders where you're like, oh my God, this FC Dallas team is going to kick on. And that was a team without Ricardo Pepi. So it's not all.
And you start
perfect. Wondering,
where's Tanner Tessman, right? So it's like,
yeah, I mean, and he looked like he was going to be maybe a guy that did that.
Yeah.
You can't say no to the whatever it was for Brian Reynolds. I mean, you have to do that, really. But, you know, Eddie Munjoma and the different – and Imogen Wasi and the guys that have been in there at right back, it hasn't been better, right?
But, like, the assumption that you're going to sell Reggie Cannon, Brian Reynolds, who's an unbelievable prospect, hits earlier than you expect, you sell him, and the assumption that a third right back is ready to play at an MLS Cup level out of your academy already – I think is a little bit tough to follow. And I'm a fan of Eddie Munjoma. I've watched him play through their academy, played at SMU. I think he's a good MLS right back. I think he can be. Obviously, there's a ton of promise around Justin Che. But still, a guy who wasn't here, then he has to get involved with the first
he's 17
team, meet
years
all these
old,
players.
Like,
it's a young back line.
Yeah.
Tafari, Twemasi, Che, like Munjoma. Hedges is there, but it's a young back line.
And he's been hurt.
Hedges has been
Jose
hurt.
Martinez is new.
I think if Jimmy Maurer was healthy, we wouldn't be having this conversation. If you just had him, and you talked about Andre Blake for Philly, Kaylin, of just like being that eraser that maybe can cover up some issues when a Mark McKenzie leaves, or as Mark McKenzie got his feet wet, because remember, it was supposed to be Austin Trusty first.
Sure.
And as he struggled, Mark McKenzie elevated his game and stepped in. But youth development is not linear. and these players are not always going to be better the next day than they were the day before. I want to read this, an email from an avid FC Dallas fan who says, nearly 3 years of Luchi Gonzalez coaching in MLS has shown us that for now, his teams rarely, if ever, rise above the level of their talent and rarely, if ever, stamp a discernible style on the game. I've got no problem with resetting to try to find someone who can do that. However, I also don't think Luchi ever significantly underperformed his talent. And this year, between the injuries to the defense, the awful recruitment of the past 24 months, the standings are an accurate reflection of the team. In fact, with Pepe, Ferreira, and Tafari, two players that developed under Luchi from their young teenage years and a project draft pick that became an MLS starter, they'd be, without them, they'd be near the wooden spoon. So he says, if the front office is going to get a pass for their shortcomings, shouldn't Luchi as well? And I think that's kind of where we're all netting out, is he's kind of performed around their talent level. The question mark is, what's their talent level and maybe the focus of the club in terms of building that talent out.
So here's some attacking signings. We harp on this, and certainly Doyle is maybe the most repeat offender in that sense since Luchi came. Cobra in, had some good moments, gone. Was Edwin Giassia an attacking player?
Yeah,
I can't even remember at this point. Yeah, he's a winger, right?
Yeah.
There was a reason why you can't remember what position he played. Andres Recuarte, decent profile, hasn't really delivered.
So Recuarte, if you remember, was a summer signing, and I think it was in reaction to Paxton getting hurt. So I don't think the belief was they were going to bring a player in that position. That was last year.
Frank O'Hara in there has not lived up to maybe the price tag and the reputation. Jader Obrion, no, not this year. Hasn't been good enough, you would think, to elevate them at least. Freddy Vargas, haven't seen really anything. Sean, young player.
I mean, Sean's been good this year, but Sean was at the Euros.
Yeah.
Like, so the one of the three guys who looks ready to play right now, and I'm not going to call Freddy Vargas and Hadar bust, because I think the point was they were young signings to develop, but they're not better than Michael Barrios this year in MLS. So as you said, you're taking a step back. They're not better than Fafa this year in MLS, although Fafa has been better than he was in Dallas. So take that as you will. And then Sean, the one that you had, hasn't been around and hasn't been available, because to your credit, you went out and got a full international from Europe at a young age who's ready to be a part of a Euros roster.
Where do FC Dallas go from here? Like, what kind of coach are they looking for? Like, and does that coach...
I'd say they're looking for a coach who's good at youth development, who can help build out
young players. Who has a connection to the community, probably speaks Spanish.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
No, they'll if they're smart, they will go for a very similar profile, I would imagine. Because the worry is actually that they shift. Because if you were to take let's take the bottom five teams in the Western Conference right now, and you were to say, which club do you think has the clearest identity of who they are, what they want to be about, and the way they want to kind of like run as a club? Austin, brand new team, new manager, you know, 19 points, not going well for them in the first season. Houston, pains me to say it, I'd rather, they're trying to chase FC Dallas in the standings as well as the identity, and figure out how they can get young players into the academy and through to the first team. San Jose, similar story. They've got some young players that are breaking through a little bit, but they're spending a lot of money on a manager that, and they're still not making the playoffs.
See, this is where I disagree, Kalen. They are all in on chaos. I actually think they're more dedicated than anybody else to their identity.
To identity? Okay, yeah. Fair enough. Vancouver lost the manager, trying to figure it out. So of that group, Dallas to me has the clearest path forward as far as what they're doing, what they're about. And, you know, so I think if they're smart, they'll go after a similar profile, I don't know who that person is.
Yeah, but does that person exist with the depth of relationships? I don't know, man. It's an interesting one. I'm very curious to see where FC Dallas go. They say they're going to start the process immediately. I do think it's interesting that Marco Ferruzzi's in as that as the head coach on the interim basis. He was an assistant, I think, for a long time with them, as well as some other roles. I think he's been there since 2004.
Yeah, he was there under multiple coaches. Yeah.
Yeah, so he's been there a long time.
The timing is interesting, too, because they're what, like 6 points out right now? Maybe a little more, 7 points
seven.
Out?
Seven, with that, also a two additional games played at Minnesota United.
Okay. All right. Well, I just wonder if it seems to indicate that there's enough time in the season still that they feel that they can still make a push to try and get in the playoffs. And so I don't know. That if that's the rationale, I understand it even less. But But I don't know. We'll see. I mean, it'll be. We'll have to see which way they take it.
One thing, you talk about injuries in the back line. Nobody's allowed more goals other than Cincinnati and Toronto than FC Dallas this year.
So the only thing I'll say is, off the end of this, is I know you guys probably on Thursday. Sorry, I was away. I was atoning
for all of our sins, actually.
I did it as a collective ETR.
that's really generous. That's super generous of you to really take that on board.
Yeah. I know Landon Donovan's been rumored around the RSL job. To me, that's a no-brainer for them to try and pursue Lucci Gonzalez. With the facilities they have and they've built out. And again, I think they're in a club that maybe, obviously you don't have a new owner, so you don't know what it'll be. They seem to have a clear idea of their identity in terms of what it means and how they can win in MLS. I think Lucci could be very successful there. And whatever capacity, you assume Inter Miami is calling him because he's a Miami native. He's Peruvian American. He coached at Weston FC, which is one of the biggest academies in that Florida area. So he is Miami through and through. And that's another area that you'd love to tap into properly from a youth development point of view. So you would assume that they're going to give him a call as well. Obviously, they don't have a head coach opening, so it would have to be a different position.
Yeah, and look, that's a possibility for Lucci as well. You'd think if people needed help with their academy, somebody to run that, to organize it, to start it from the ground up, he would be a good option there. The USU-20s job is open. That could be really, really interesting for him. And you never know. Maybe there's jobs open in Texas as well, because FC Dallas are not the only Texas team sitting at the bottom of the Western Conference. So lack of results has a way of resulting in opportunities for other people.
It's all Texas right now.
Yeah, put a top in Texas.
Oh, man, tough year for the striker. Tough
hey, we got the Batallón, Houston, baby. Three games unbeaten. I like it.
Whoa. All right, let's keep it rolling here. Let us know what you think about Lucci Gonzalez and FC Dallas. Dallas fans, we'd love to hear from you. 401-206-0MLS, extratime@MLSsoccer.com. Talking life on the line, the playoff line, the biggest
bubble
results.
Guys, I'm a little embarrassed about this H situation. I just found out how short my fingers are.
Wait, what were you trying? You're trying to
That's do the H. Don't you do the H that way?
No, I think that's like hook 'em horns down.
No, like, how do you do Houston? That's how they do Houston.
I don't know.
Yeah, and you got
I don't know. I'm also just feeling, you said embarrassed. I'm feeling embarrassed that I was like three games unbeaten, Dynamo. We're back.
Dynamo.
Anyways.
Kaylin, right, well, just so you know, Zarek says that your Venmo's on the way for that.
Yeah. eight points. Hey man, Houston are like, they could maybe reach that bubble. They're not out yet. Probably soon. They haven't won a game on the road all season long. All right, let's get to the bubble. You guys talked about Atlanta being back, or at least I think I was gone. Maybe it was you and Charlie, Dave. I don't know, Kaylin, if you were around for that one. Well, Atlanta is still back, I guess. 3-2 winners at home against DC United. Ezekiel Barco, he's vibing. This is the Barco that had me making Baron tees, 20 goals and assists combined. He could get that. I mean, he might even get that this year, though, with the route he's going. The free kick, absurd. Gets another goal
Weeby,
as
you
well.
You feel comfortable just throwing 20?
I'm bringing it back.
You're back, Weeby. You're
Dude,
back.
That was No, it was not 20 and 10. It was 20 goals and assists combined. But it was a terrible Baron tee at the time, so now I'm just revisionist historying, and I'm going back and pulling it back out and being like, see, I was on to something. I knew he was capable of this the entire time.
Yikes,
Luis Araujo, he can cook. The dude is just, he's got it pretty clearly from the jump. Forget adaptation period. Joseph Martinez is back scoring goals. They're doing this without Miles Robinson. They rested him. What does this tell you about Atlanta, Kaylin? If I was to give you the entire Eastern Conference and take the Revs out of the equation and ask you who has the highest ceiling come end of October into November in the playoffs, who would it be?
Well, it could be Atlanta, but I'm riding with Nashville. I'm riding with Nashville. I feel like Nashville to me is the team that has the biggest threat to New England in the playoffs.
Even after a road loss in Toronto.
I know that this is interesting timing to say that with the loss to, you know, bottom dwellers, TFC, sadly.
All right, we'll get to Nashville in a second then.
But Atlanta are on the rise, and they do have a favorable schedule. I think if you look through the rest of the season, they have a ton of games against teams that are near the bottom of the Eastern Conference. Not to mention they have the new manager, which I think has honestly just been the biggest shift for Atlanta as far as, you know, just it's amazing what you can get out of people when they enjoy their work and they get to enjoy themselves and they feel respected and they're like, there's just a good vibe happening in the team. And connected, yes, you can say.
And hydrated.
Wow. All of those things, they're all connected to all those things are connected. And I think, you know, even when you listen to Pineda speak about the team and, you know, or even the fans, but especially about the players, and he was talking about Barco and he had some, I think, some pretty glowing things to say about him. And it kind of is a page out of the Schmetzer book as far as continuing to give praise to the players as opposed to yourself, and then the players will kind of give that back to you. But even I was listening to Twitter Spaces and you guys were talking about just kind of like what the vibe was like in Atlanta right now with Felipe, and he was talking about just them like kind of being able to recapture some of the sort of free play moments and those things within a team, that it's amazing how far that will take you, just to kind of have that trust, that feeling within the squad. And and he's getting the best out of these guys. I mean, they look completely revitalized right now. And I think for Joseph, we always knew he was going to get stronger as the season went on. I think there's still time for him to even get better. But the players around him really are the ones that are flying right now. And they are a genuine threat to move up the table. And I think potentially even get to a point where they could potentially host a home game in the playoffs, which you would never have guessed earlier in the season. You would say, I don't, you know, are they going to get in? Are they not going to get in? Now they look more likely. I feel pretty confident they're going to be in. They look more confident. More likely to actually rise up into the table.
So the Eastern Conference is a little bit of a mess from basically 2 to 10, hence why Kalen says that. But let me run you through, since Rob Valentino took over, which has now kind of guided into the Gonzalo Pineda era, Atlanta drew Cincinnati. They lost to Columbus. They lost Orlando City. They drew Montreal. They beat Columbus on the road. They beat LAFC 1-0. Then they beat Toronto FC, DC United. They lost at home to Nashville. They beat Orlando City, which is probably the biggest win of this entire run. They beat FC Cincinnati, and then they just beat DC United again 3-2. DC, obviously a borderline playoff team because they're fighting with Atlanta. If you take that out, one win against Orlando is the only win over a playoff team in that entire run. And they've lost in that run to a fair amount of teams that aren't in the playoff conversation. Like Columbus, I don't know if we've taken them out yet, but I think
I don't know. I think the beginning of that run and the transition from really seemingly hate being here to Rob Valentino getting things back, I don't know that you can like put that on this team. Luis Araujo's not in that team. Marcelino Moreno doesn't have the same form and confidence. But, Barco's certainly not the same player.
So I don't.
Joseph
totally
Martinez wasn't at the same level.
I don't totally.
Miles Robinson was gone
you.
For the Gold Cup, right? Like
I don't totally disagree Bella. With you. But in the question of confidence in the playoffs, that is why I don't have confidence in them. That doesn't mean they're not good enough. That doesn't mean they're not playing well right now. But when you ask, who do you have belief in? I take the year of Nashville so far over the week and a half of confidence that Marcelino Moreno and Barco are showing. Because we don't know that Barco can keep it up consistently. And it might be that Pineda is the whisper, or it might be that this is a good week for Barco. And then we go back to the Barco we've seen for 3 years. And it might be the same for Moreno. So that's the only thing that stands in the way of having confidence for them long term. For Atlanta fans, this is great. They're fun to watch. This is what you want. It looks like they are strong enough to make a playoff push. And I think that's all a victory to close out this year.
I'm just saying I think their ceiling is really high. Whether or not they reach their ceiling is a whole different question entirely. But when you have Miles Robinson back in this team, when you have sort of the settled lineup that they've been able to get to, when you have that front four feeling it, that's a team that can look like the Atlanta United teams of old. Will they look like that? I don't know. I don't have that. I don't have the crystal ball, right? But if I was in the Eastern Conference and I was looking at teams that are going to get hot at the right time or are hot at the right time and build toward the playoffs, Atlanta would be at or near the very, very top of that list. Our 2,222 players of the weekend presented by Body Armor both come from the Five Stripes. George Bello got a goal in this one to seal it. And then George Campbell's played some big minutes lately. They can rest Miles Robinson right now because they've built George Campbell up and put him in a position where he feels confident and he is successful. So congratulations to Atlanta United, Gonzalo Pineda, to everybody involved. It's trending upwards. It's fun to see. All right, other bubble watch here. Where do you want to go? We got Portland knocking off LAFC at home. We got RSL against the Sounders. Could go Minnesota, Reynoso equals decent. Impact. I know we always love to talk Wilfred Nantse. Trophies for newcomer of the year. Any of these stand out to you? What's like the biggest one in your mind this weekend on the bubble?
I guess Minnesota.
You think so?
It wasn't that we didn't know that this was possible, but they need to get the results. Right? They need, we've said it on this show for 2 weeks, when they had Load back and when they had Reynoso back, we thought they were good enough, but we had to see that. And they just need to get the points to get themselves safely into a playoff spot. So I think that was huge. And when you look at the game and you look at the two goals for Reynoso, all of them are in moments where he has space because of the other players on the field around him. And that hasn't been the case this year. So the first goal is Robin Lode, I think, sets him up. And you see Fragapane, I think, kind of stretch the back line a little on the top of the box to give him space to shoot. And then the second one as well. And so I think that's pretty big to see for this Minnesota United team, is proof of concept and proof that when they're all in there together, it all works. This wasn't the best LA Galaxy team they could have played, but it was fairly close. And this is a pretty dominating performance to also rebound from the SKC loss, which could have had one of those moments where the whole team kind of falls apart or falls on yourself. And you say, oh, we lost 4-0 to a playoff rival. Where do we stand? So I think that was a pretty big performance, a pretty big weekend for them.
How about RSL? RSL won an insane one against the Quakes that they needed to sort of keep pace. And then they beat the Sounders and Freddie Vargas at home. One of maybe the like most interesting, iconic shots of the weekend, shout out to the producers out there, was in the second half, I think it was, Schmetzer on the bench. And Freddie's like scribbling on a whiteboard, and you got Preki around him, and it's like, this is their head coach. I said Freddie Vargas. Jeez, I had that on my mind. Freddie Juarez, my bad. Freddie Vargas somehow stuck in my mind from the SC Dallas conversation. But this is a huge win for El Salt Lake, and it was also our Celebrating Soccer moment of the weekend presented by Continental Tire. I don't know if you guys saw this or anybody did out there, but afterwards, Sam Yarick interviewing Demir Krylock, who scored the game winner in this one, now has 10 goals on the season. His brother is there, probably hasn't seen him since COVID started. And Demir is crying basically on the field afterwards after this huge win for RSL, fueled by him, his 10th goal of the season. They're up to 36 points, sixth in the West. In a year in which their head coach has basically said, you know what, actually I think it's better for me to walk away, and walked away. They don't have an ownership group. They're in extreme limbo. And yet here they are competing in that position. And here's Demir Krylock just kind of showing you his family man credentials. That was one of the most heartwarming moments of the weekend. And this is just a huge, incredible result. What did you guys think about the midfield from Schmetzer, Atencio and Leyva?
This was the conversation around Leagues Cup. You can't play everyone all the time.
Yep.
So they went for it. On Wednesday night, they've got a final coming up. Those guys are good enough to almost win this game. Like I think they had a header flash wide of the post, or sorry, tie this game in like the 87th minute. That's where you're at. They're probably not good enough to win week in and week out on the road. But for Seattle, I think the goal is to win trophies, and I don't think Supporters Shield is within touching distance. And so that's what this week called for them, and I think there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, I agree with that. I do want to give... Oh, go ahead. Yeah, Wednesday.
Club Leon, Seattle, Wednesday. Leagues Cup Final, ESPN2, Unimas, 2DN. We're going to do a pregame show on Twitter Spaces like we do for the U.S. national team. So when the lineup comes out, tune into that, and then we'll do a reaction afterwards. For all of you Leagues Cup aficionados out there, just like me, who are just in love with this wonderful, beautiful, likely to expand tournament.
Don't want to ever step on a Leagues Cup promo, so I apologize to you, first,
Charlie,
baby.
Charlie doesn't actually feel the same. He is happily stepping all over them and trying to encourage
I heard
them.
Like, that.
Every time I try to bring Leagues Cup on Thursday, he's like shifting it away. And I'm like, Charlie, yeah. I give you time for your pet projects and players. Like, how many times did I listen to Anthony Fontana talk over the last X amount of years? And you can't give me 45 freaking seconds about Leagues Cup anyway.
Well, no. But if you want to get Rev season tickets, Charlie Davies, your guy.
He kills those promos.
Live.
I'm surprised he's not just breaking into those in the middle of shows where he's like, I don't even know. I just blacked out, bro. I just blacked out. But if you want season tickets, here's the number.
Only thing I wanted to say was we gave left backs a lot of love early in the show and well-deserved for Justin Morrow. But Herrera for Salt Lake, oh, I think nine assists now, should get some love as well, too. I think he's third in MLS right now in assists and had a beautiful one to Krylak on the goal.
He's a hell of a player.
Let me bring, I was going to say this about Justin Morrow.
And he also smashed a volley off the crossbar, which
unreal.
Was like,
unreal.
Oh my God.
So Herrera has now played right back and right wing back because RSL has shifted from a back four to a back five, depending on the personnel. He's done it all successfully. He has nine assists. Justin Morrow did not get call-ups because Jurgen Klinsmann wasn't calling up guys from Major
League. Todd Donovan as well. But I was going to mention about the U.S. lack of call-ups for those guys.
Yeah, and that's why the conversation even exists so debatably about whether or not they're the best at their position. Aaron Herrera shouldn't have to go to Europe to get an opportunity. We just came through a camp where Kellen Acosta and Tyler Adams had to play right back for stretches of time. Aaron Herrera, I think in Olympic qualifying and throughout the last 2-3 years in MLS, has shown he is good enough to be in that pool. And if no one else is healthy or available or willing to defend at that position, he should be in the conversation to get call-ups. That's my point.
There have been some talk about like ceiling with him, and I don't agree with that. I also think that he would be a perfect CONCACAF player.
100%.
He's just got that DNA in him. So yeah, like here's our call. More Aaron Herrera, please.
This assist.
And by the way, he can play on both sides too, and has
played
in his MLS career. So if you're saying, oh well, we need versatility, like he brings that as well. Plus, he's in like an a-hole to play against. I love that. How about the impact? Let's talk impact. Speaking of players that should get more love, Georgie should get more love. Joaquin Torres should get more love. Romel Kyoto continues to be a problem. The Impact are a problem. This is a big week for the Montreal Impact. Two wins, I believe.
Yeah, I think they're FC Montreal now.
God.
So it was a big week.
Oh, my God. I cannot break this. Like it is impossible for me to break this. Like I'm watching the game this weekend, and I'm seeing the Club de Foot logo at Stade Saputo. I'm like, it's wrong. It feels wrong to me still. I don't know what it is.
In fairness,
I have to get over the hump.
If Anders hadn't said it, I didn't even notice it. So that's how natural it seems to me.
Dang.
As well. Joaquin Torres, he brings them something no one else does, which is just 1v1 ability. And the game's just easier when you know you have someone who can create something out of nothing, where it takes the pressure off of ball possession and creating chances through those moments. We've said all year that Wilfred Nancy deserves to be in that conversation for whatever you want it to be. But Montreal has rebounded better than any of the other teams in the playoff races. Maybe RSL too. Of every time it feels like, that's a heartbreaking loss. You know, they lose at home to Nashville, I think it was last week. Now I'm trying to get all my teams right and all my dates right.
Yeah.
That feels like a heartbreaking loss. And they had chance after chance after chance in that game to go ahead and then tie it up. They come back with a result. And so that's what is confident and you feel good about with Montreal is they've maintained themselves in that playoff spot throughout the entire year.
It is going to get hard for Montreal. But what they've accomplished so far, pretty incredible. We're going to have the Wilfred Nancy Coach of the Year. Probably not going to win it, but who's done the most conversation in just a second.
How many Coach of the Year trophies will Continental give us to hand out? Because I don't know. Like
we should figure that out. How about this? On the bubble, Inter Miami getting blasted at home against the Red Bulls. I say they're fool's gold. What say you?
I don't know. I mean, I think they're still...
Quick, someone come to Inter Miami's defense.
So I picked them last week to make the playoffs. Based off the way the schedule landed, I think of those teams in those conversations, Gregory might be the best player on any of those teams. I felt like he had solidified things to the point where do you get performances or not out of Higuain and Pizarro? It doesn't matter because they're not going to give up goals. And I thought that they were at enough of a place where then they would get enough to get there. Then they lost 4-0 at home to the New York Red Bulls, who haven't scored a goal in 6 months. And all of that obviously went up in the air. They get the red card.
Yeah, Phil Neville afterwards, like, we have one healthy center back. Well, that's not great when three in the back has been sort of your recipe for success. I think they're fool's gold. I can't see it coming down the stretch, but maybe I'll be surprised by Inter
Miami. They're very fragile, and it'll be interesting to see. I mean, I think the thing will be is can they respond? And we saw when they lost 5-0 to the Revs that they did respond, and that's what put them on this run. So you'd hope for them this is more of a blip, and can Neville kind of like just get it back to basics in this one? Because Figal was, you know, he got a red card, but I think he could have been sent off probably before that. And just, I think overall, like, they just seem, I said last week that these last 8 games or 9 games, whatever they have left, it'll feel like, for a lot of teams, that's a short amount of time. I think for Inter Miami, it's a long time because I think they can fluctuate wildly. They've been consistent, but I agree. They're right on that edge of like 2 results go bad and I could see it just implode.
I just don't think they have the depth. If they don't have their guys, they're going to have a really hard time.
You think anyone in this playoff race does?
I don't know. I think they in particular do not. And when they haven't had Grigori on the field, et cetera, or center backs in the right positions, they've been awful. And he's saying he said he didn't think he was going to play Robinson or Grigori in this game, that they were not ready, that they had issues and knocks, and he played them both and started them. So I don't know if that's media stuff by Phil Neville being like, oh, these two players are most important players, definitely not playing this week, and Gerhard Struber, do not prepare for them. Oh, I'm going to start them. Or if he was just like, damn, I'm desperate. I got to have these guys. So I got to get points at home and then take a 4-0. I don't know. Yeah. We'll see about Inter Miami. I'm going to have them out of the playoffs personally. What did you guys make of the Portland win?
Brutal
how
for
good,
LAFC.
How good is that win against LAFC? That stopped LAFC from a 5-game no-loss streak. They've been pretty good. They've been on form. Had a lot of chances. They beat down the door.
I mean, it was just brutal. They had so many chances in this one. I think 14 shots, 2 of them were on goal, which would tell you a lot of the story and a lot of their season. Just like every time they've gotten great opportunities, it just has not fallen down, even down to like the Cifuentes one is the one where, you know, probably stands out the most. But Fernandez had chances and you're just like, oh, like it's just one of those where I thought they had kind of broken through where they were getting, there was the 3-2 win or the 4-0 win, and they were just finding ways to get like goals in bunches. And they're always going to give up opportunities. I think that's just kind of their system, the way they're going to play. But the lack of finishing ability, you know, has been their, like, you know, it's been their season, really. It's really been their season. And like a lot is on Arango to get opportunities and create chances. And he's been stepping up to the plate in those ways. But I think this one will especially hurt, and good for Portland on the other side, because, you know, you see what their difference is when they get Sebastian Blanco back in form, how good he can be. Dairon Asprilla has had a quietly sneaky, consistent season.
Playoff Dairon came to the regular season.
But he still had a moment yesterday where I think Ibiaga passed it right into his feet to break the other way, and his touch, first touch.
But that's still playoff
Dairon.
Fair. Like, come on, it's not all good. That's true. It's not all good.
I agree with what Kalen said, though. I think, one, the reaction to this game for both of us first being, man, LAFC couldn't finish their chances, sort of shows you where Portland stands right now. They still lack balance. When they go forward and create chances, they are vulnerable at the back. If they put a ton of numbers behind the ball to stop creating chances, to stop goals against them, they struggle. But the one thing that is different now is Sebastian Blanco is getting better and better every single game. And you go back to the MLS's back formula, and you go back to the MLS Cup run from 2-3 years ago. And that is, okay, if Blanco's good enough, we can sit numbers behind the ball because he can create chances against the run of play. Niyashkoda gets a couple minutes as well for this Timbers team. So you look at them, and they can go as far as Blanco can take them, which if he's not available, that wasn't the case. But I didn't watch this game and walk away and say, wow, this is a new Timbers team. This wasn't what we expected. This wasn't what we have been seeing. I probably have to eat crow on Felipe Mora. I get that. Anders loves to remind me.
Didn't even have to prompt you on this.
Yeah, Anders loves to remind me twice a week.
He probably should have, maybe had a goal in this game.
Oh, weird.
Very close offside
Interesting.
Call.
Yeah, interesting. Again, but he's the type of player who's better when Blanco's there, right? he is an in-the-box poacher. He doesn't come out and create chances. And now with Blanco back, he can go back to what he does best. As Niashkoda works his way back, he can go back to what he does best. And so Blanco just makes everyone better.
Meanwhile, the Union, we talked with them a little bit. I had kind of been like, ooh, is it running away from them? And then they lost in Champions League, and they didn't score in, against Club America. But then afterwards, Alejandro Bedoya was like, yeah, if we play like this, we are going to be in the playoffs, and we're going to hurt people. And I was like, I don't know, Alejandro. Like, I'm looking at your goal scoring, and you really have none. And then they go win 3-0 against Orlando, who we'll talk about in just a second as maybe a contender to be worried about. It was a weird one. Go watch Instant Replay for sort of the early breakdown on the first goal for the Union. I don't think it should have stood. Just common sense tells me that, as well as I think the laws. But as always, the laws are up for interpretation, and the opinion of the referee is kind of the key point in the laws of the
game.
What
would Ted Lasso say about it?
I don't know, dude.
A man who has done more for the game than anyone
I'm trying
else.
To think of something similar, hyperbole. Like, I'm trying to go hyperbole here, but maybe that was the most important referee call in the history of the game, of the league, I don't know, whatever. The Union maybe are back, so we'll see about them. Right now, the playoffs look like this at the bottom. The last three teams in the West, Portland, Salt Lake, Minnesota. Last three teams out are LAFC, Vancouver, and San Jose. The gap right at the line is 1 point, but it's pretty packed up from really the Galaxy all the way down to LAFC. So you're talking about five teams there, and if Vancouver and San Jose can get their acts together, maybe they can make a run. In the East, the last three teams in Montreal.
It was a good result for Vancouver and Colorado.
It was, actually. I thought Colorado should have absolutely won 100%. This game. It was a huge wasted opportunity from them. They dominated the first half completely and then gave up just an awful goal. I was getting ready to tweet for
Danny
Wilson.
That's a great finish.
It was, but I was getting ready for a tweet for Danny Wilson, who scored the goal earlier on the set piece that Vancouver conveniently did not mark at all. And I was like, hey, you know what? We kind of dumped on a lot of their incoming guys, especially out of the Champo, but Danny Wilson's been big this year, and then he passed it to the wrong team, and they scored. So
for Vancouver, to get a result there is big. They need something from Cavallini. Since Gault has got there, Cavallini's been injured.
No, they don't. They got Brian White.
Oh, my God, man. Cavallini came on the field. He tried to square a shot in a moment where he was 2-on-1 with the goalkeeper. I don't really understand what he was trying to do. He is a DP for them. If he gives them anything close to what he even was last year when he was out there by himself, this team could make the playoffs, or will make the playoffs.
Good. They've looked a lot better. There's no doubt about that. It's interesting to see what they'll do with that head coaching position as well. In the East, the last three in Montreal, Club de Foot Montreal, Atlanta and Philadelphia, and then below the line is DC, Miami, and Columbus, who I guess are all still technically alive. But from Nashville all the way to Columbus, 2-10, that's only a 10-point gap.
Maybe put your name on something. Pick teams, and don't give me a list. Pick the final playoff.
Give me the prompt.
Pick the final three playoff teams in order in the Eastern Conference.
The final three playoff teams in the East. I will stick with...
You don't have to give me an order. You could say three.
I will stick with the current teams. I think Montreal, Atlanta, and Philly will be those teams.
Ooh, okay.
The only team I think has a chance to jump it is DC, and I don't think they will.
Okay. Edson Flores comes back with a goal.
I know. That was incredible. Felipe had an absolute laser beam as well. Yeah. So TBD, but that's where I would stand on the Eastern Conference right now. And since you didn't ask, but I'll go to the West as well. And I think I would stick with it. I don't think LAFC will rise. Too many issues in the back line for them.
You're double winning LAFC squad?
Yeah, I know, dude. I'm giving up. I'm walking away. Probably going to pay for that, too. Probably
the Chicharito Shrine is just engulfing.
But you know if they win something, I'm going to go straight to Anders and be like, yeah, the about hour five mark in that September 20th show, I'm going to need you to scrub that from the internet forever. Here's a question for you. Which contender would you be most worried about right now, Orlando City or the Galaxy? Orlando, three straight losses, two wins in their last nine. The Galaxy are winless in their last six and got worked over by Minnesota with Chicharito, by the way.
I would say Orlando for two reasons. One is without pieces in central midfield, the defense has looked shaky, and that was their strong point last year. And
that was
unassailable. And then it was, where are they going to get goals? And so now it's shaky on both ends. Obviously, DK being in, maybe they can build more going forward. And Vandewaters looks pretty good when he's gotten opportunities. But I'm worried about that. And the flip side with the Galaxy, I think in games that Jonas started, and he hasn't started many, they've given up more than one goal only in the El Trafico. That was the Wild 3-3 game. So I'm not going to judge this back line without him in front of them to help out until I either, one, know he's going to be hurt the rest of the year, or I've seen them fail with him.
Is there an yeah, is both an opportunity?
yeah, take it. You can take both. There's a little fade going on for both.
I think the Galaxy, the question has always been, can they defend? Can they keep clean sheets? Jonah Dos Santos did not start in this last match, and Reynoso just had a field day. It was just brutal, him just going around and turning guys around, and he's a fantastic player. But even just in other matches I've seen the Galaxy play, they just, some of the goals that if they've given up this year are ones where you're like, if that comes in the playoffs, and I think both of these teams are clearly playoff teams, but if I could see the Galaxy just leaking a terrible goal in the playoffs and that being it. And when I look at Orlando, this week has been emblematic too of a lot of when I see them bad is when they get, they're their own worst enemies at times. And they've got two red cards in the last two matches, both I think in the first half. Was this last one in the first match as well? First
no,
half as well?
The last, this oh. one was like the 85th, I think, with Carlos.
Oh, sorry. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That was late on. He got caught chasing behind.
But either way, they're giving Emmanuel Reynoso time and space at the top of the box to, sorry.
Well, I'm talking about Orlando.
Too bad defense. I'm confused right now. By the way, they only have four shutouts on the year. So they're not shooting for shutouts. They're just shooting for one goal games where they can outscore teams because they can't really get shutouts.
Which is fine.
Yeah. But I think Orlando takes big risks and makes and gets in their own way as far as some of the kind of challenges or ways they run into each other. And I think, you know, they run on emotion. We saw it in the playoffs last year, which is fantastic. It was incredibly awesome to watch that run through the playoffs. Sometimes that can work towards your favor, and at other times it can really knock you down.
Nani, 0 goals, 1 assist in his last 7. Daryl DK trying to come back. Chris Mueller, not the difference maker he was last year. Mauricio Pereira in and out of the lineup. That could be an issue for Orlando, and we know the issues with the Galaxy, though. Greg Vanney has led them to great heights this year. A note, though, here, Nashville could get into this conversation. They got a lot of road games to end the season. I know they've been decent on the road. You made that point to me in the pregame recently, Dave, outside this Toronto.
Their last two road games were wins at Montreal and Atlanta, which are both teams in
the playoffs. Those were good. They'll have to keep it up, though, if they want to be there. They got to win on the road to hold on to that spot in the second spot in the East. Let's do this conversation and then do a little wooden spoon and get the heck out of here. We talked about it. The coach of the year is going to go to Bruce Arena, or it's going to go to Brian Schmetzer. It will almost certainly go to Bruce Arena. If you go look at the history of the coach of the year award, I had a lot of people saying to me, like, well, that's not how I see the coach of the year. I'm like, well, I don't care how you see the coach of the year. Here's how the voters and history see coach of the year. I've been doing this for a long time. The Supporters Shield winner almost always wins it. If they don't win it, it's because they won it the year before or something weird happens, as we talked before, where you have Jesse Marsh and Chris Armas splitting a shield. So Bruce is going to win this. Like, I'm just going to put it there. So if you take out the obvious choices...
He's
going
to be elated. It's going to mean so much to him.
Oh, my God. He's just going to be... he's going to pull that black sweatshirt on for the press conference and really just wow all of us.
You think he gets a Rolex for that?
I don't know. I didn't think that was cool that Andrew Farrell got the Rolly. That was well earned for Andrew Farrell. Who would be the coach?
MLS players are getting Rolexes now. Wait, hold on a second.
Maybe if you stuck it out in Chicago.
Yeah, man, you got to reach a certain.
How many appearances do you have to get for that? Yeah.
Was it?
Well, you probably got to be that. He's got the most in club history, Kalen. So you got to be around.
Honestly, I mean, yeah. Wow.
Valeri hit 300.
Honestly, the most shocking part of that to me is not that Andrew Farrell is getting a Rolex, and it's where he got it. It's in that training complex where I was looking.
Yeah,
at
I saw
like,
that.
I've been at these like crazy fields out in Braintree, Florida, playing on like,
Massachusetts.
Like Florida, Massachusetts, out in the middle of nowhere.
Is Braintree, Florida, a real place?
No,
that's where
dude,
we used to stay.
Me?
There's like I would go to like the Cinnabon before games. It was bad out there.
Bro,
there was nothing going on. There was like a terrible mall across the street.
Did you get Orange Julius to go with it too?
Basically. But the
Little anti-ends got cinnamon sugar.
Good for the Revs, but that almost looks unrecognizable. Their facilities look amazing.
Yeah, what a difference that can make. So how about this? Coach of the year, non-Shield winning coach of the year. Coach of the year that has done the most, their team has most improved, or done the most with the least. I don't know, however you want to define it. Who are the guys out there? You want me to do it? Because I can do lists better than anybody else in the world.
Sure.
Robin
it.
Frazier, Wilfred Nance, Hernan Losada. I'd say you get Gonzalo Pinota could be kind of your troll, like get Atlanta fans going pick here. Greg Vanney and Gary Smith could be there. Vanney has a little less momentum. Gary Smith has maybe a little more momentum.
Why?
Their teams are on the better end here.
Just saying the run of play.
Yeah, just the run of play. Who would you give it to, though?
So I think I would give it to Wilfred Nancek. And really? That's not a knock on Robin Fraser, because I think the Rapids are awesome to watch. They are, to me, one of the most entertaining teams in the league right now. I love teams where the game is not a weak link game. Like, they have no weaknesses, and it's just about where they're going to create chances and who's going to show up. And I think it's actually going to get better now. They've been missing a few pieces. Jonathan Lewis has gotten a pretty long run, and I don't think he's consistent enough for them. His finishing isn't there still. So I actually think it's going to get better. But they were, what, fourth in the West last year? Fifth, I think. And right now they're third. So for improvement and what you've done, especially against what I expected, and when you look at the Canadian teams and what they dealt with living out of the country and not knowing when they're going to come home and coming home and not having fans and all of that, to me, Wilfred Nancy has overperformed, has gotten his players to overperform, and as I said, has done it consistently through ups and downs over the course of this season.
You convinced me pretty well there. Not gonna lie, I was like so on the Robin Fraser train that I was like, this is absurd. But you did a good job convincing.
I would actually
Robin
argue won. That Vanny would be ahead of Fraser for me because of what he took over and what he's gotten to over the course of this season.
But he has a lot. The resources that Vanny has are completely different than what Robin has.
He starts Daniel Steres and Derek Williams in central midfield.
Sure, but the amount of money in the incoming transfers this year that Greg's been able to sort of be a part of and choose is a incomplete. I don't know. The flip side is the Rapids have done it in a different way, but like when you just say the names like Michael Barrios and Mark Anthony Kaye, et cetera, like
For Fraser, it's been 2.5 years. Like what he took over and what he has gotten to is the same, if not better, than what Greg Vanney has done. But Vanney has done it in one window where you can give him the coach of the year. Also, you're talking about money and bringing guys in. Is there nothing we've learned that there's no guarantee on bringing foreign players into this league? Like outside of Jorge Villafana, none of them were MLS guys.
The other side of it is almost like very small percentage of teams that don't spend very much money have results that put them in the third spot in the Western Conference.
Yeah.
Those are the outliers. We can't sit here and be like, oh, well, the Philadelphia Union did it last year, so everybody can. Like, no, most people do not do that. So let us know what you think. Coach of the year outside of Bruce. We'll finish with this one because we don't have any mail. By the way, fill up the mailbag.
Yeah, fill up the mailbag. I have something for the mailbag.
Zero MLS. Is it from Dave in Brooklyn Heights?
No, it's from David in Salt Lake City.
Oh, okay.
So David, obviously known as David Ochoa as well.
Oh, yeah. That David.
Last Thursday or Wednesday, whenever the games were, gave up the hat trick to Chofis, including there was an Olympico, right?
Yeah.
And he said, and this is David Ochoa's quote this week, referring to the corner kick goal from Chofis. He says, looking back at the tape, I put the ball into my own net, so it was an own goal, and that guy didn't really get a hat trick. I don't even know.
There's a lot to unpack there.
Is he in that moment? Is he not?
The best part is he said he's claiming not to even know who he is.
Yeah.
He's like, this guy just put three goals past me. He's like, I don't even know his name. Like, that guy.
He's also a former Chivas player where Davide Ochoa used to live.
Yeah, who? I don't even know who that is. Chofis? Don't know him. Don't know him at all.
Chofis almost dropped another Olympico.
I know, man. Chofis is absurd right now. He's absolutely absurd. He's like, I asked a question this last week. It's like, who's the newcomer of the year? I think I asked it on Tuesday because I was like, there's not one. It's wide open. And then Chofis was like, I am. I'm going to have the numbers. I'm going to have the hat trick now.
I look back at a bunch of my crazy
part is to do it at the near post, though. Like, is that even an Olympico?
Well, that's why
anytime I've ever seen it.
Like,
yeah.
It hit me, man.
He's taking the credit. But I actually, just to have the ball turn that quickly is really the skill of it, is that you generally see it going to the back post where the goalkeeper starts to come out fishing and it has more time to curve. This just comes straight at you. and so, I don't know. I thought Ochoa was great, man. I give that a lot of respect for being it's not really a hat. Like, it's very hard to come out into the press and talk a little bit of stuff to a guy who just dropped a hat trick on you, but he found a way.
Is it the first own goal purposely claimed in the history of own goals?
Probably.
You know, like, because most people aren't like, look, that was actually me. Like, I had that.
It might actually lower his goals Does that lower your goals against average? No,
I don't think so. No, I don't think so. Okay. That would be, you know, because then if there were bonuses at stake, it could get complicated. You could have guys doing a little tricky. Okay. I don't know. That's for a different podcast. That's it for us. Big thanks. The one question we did not get to today that I thought we might. I was asked it on the Austin FC Twitter Spaces is playoffs are not going to happen. They're the ones saying that to me, not me to them. What should Austin FC do the rest of the year? So mull over that one. Austin fans, hit us up. Fill out the mailbag for us. 401-206-0MLS. Extra time at MLSsoccer.com. Tuesday, 11 a.m. Eastern. Going to do Twitter Spaces. Doyle is going to be gone. So I think I'm going to do all guests. So check that one out. If you've listened to all this, you know you want to listen to that as well. We will be live on my handle, and it will be on YouTube with the top 10. Enjoy your week, everybody. Enjoy Leagues Cup on Wednesday night. We'll have the pregame and the postgame, so stay tuned for that. It's be good to be back talking soccer with you guys. We'll see you on Thursday. We'll be right back.